Today on Rockin' the Suburbs!
Psych furs. Psych furs.
All right, we're here at Suburbs Fest Midwest. Can you hear the excitement? There we go.
Can you feel the excitement?
That's right. We're doing a series of 10-minute episodes here with people who are in attendance at the fest here in Arlington Heights, Illinois. Arlington Ale House, this is called.
Yes.
And speaking of which, if anybody wants to buy me an Arlington Ale of some sort, it is legal in the state of Illinois. You can buy a beer for someone else, so keep that in mind. All right? Anyone? All right. I don't see anybody moving. Okay. All right, so I'm going to set the timer here. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
Today's guest is Eric Lorenz from Lincoln, Illinois.
Hello.
Drove up in his Buick and is enjoying the festivities. And I just set the timer for 10 minutes. And Eric, what is the topic?
Well, I think this will surprise you guys, but I want to talk about an album that's celebrating an anniversary that ends in zero. It's the Psychedelic Furs third album, Forever Now, which was released 40 years ago on September 25, 1982.
Okay.
It was a transitional album in many ways. There was a turnover of band members just before this. The remaining members were looking to expand their musical palette. And the producer for the first two albums, Steve Lillywhite, was unavailable. So they were up in the air as to who would produce that album. Regarding the band members, two of the six members from the first two albums, the saxophonist Duncan Kilburn and guitarist Roger Morris, had left the band, and the commitment of the drummer Vince Ely was questionable, so the remaining three members had to record the demos without a drummer, and they used a Casio keyboard, and they also were trying to write songs that incorporated a cello.
Is that right?
Yes, yes. As far as the producer goes, David Bowie was suggested because he was a big fan of the band, but unsurprisingly, he had too many other commitments to be able to produce. Other producers were considered, including Steve Lillywhite, again, whose schedule had opened up, but eventually they decided on Todd Rundgren, who was suggested by Vince Ely, the drummer.
Mm.
Several interesting aspects of the production that you can read about them in a book, A Wizard, A True Star, Todd Rundgren in the Studio by Paul Myers. And I seem to remember Patrick talking about that one.
I read that book. Yeah, it's a great book.
Yes, it is a very good book. And it's got chapters on quite a few albums that Todd Rundgren produced, including an entire chapter on this one, which I would refer the listeners to, as well as the Wikipedia page on this album. A couple highlights of the production were, rather than recording at Bearsville Studio, the album was recorded at Todd Rundgren's own home studio on Mink Hollow Road in Lake Hill, New York. Todd Rundgren played a number of instruments on the album, including the saxophone, keyboards, and the marimba on the hit single Love My Way. He also brought in the vocal duo Flo and Eddie from the Turtles to add backing vocals, sometimes in the form of wordless atmospherics, like especially on Love My Way. And the decision to add their backing vocals to Love My Way was almost an afterthought because they had wrapped up they thought they had wrapped up their recording, and then Todd Rundgren said, hey, do you want to hear what's going to be the lead single on this album? And they said, wow, we could add something to that, and so they did. So,
wow, very cool.
As far as the songs, the greater emphasis on keyboards and the use of the cello does alter the sound palette, but you can still tell that you're listening to the Psychedelic Furs. I do think this album leans a little bit more towards the new wave side of the spectrum, whereas the first two albums, I think, lean more towards the post-punk side. While Love My Way was the hit song from the album, some of my favorites include three songs that feature the cello, Only You and I, the side one closer, Sleep Comes Down, and the album closer, Yes I Do. Also like No Easy Street and Run and Run, which includes one of my all-time favorite lyrics. I've been waiting all night for someone like you, but you'll have to do. One thing I was thinking about on this album is I think there are several examples of where you have a band that releases two albums that kind of sound similar, and you think, okay, I've got this band down, and then suddenly they change. Maybe it's not a dramatic change, but they do shift their direction a little bit. A couple of examples. The Undertones. I know I talked about this when I did my Undertones episode. Their first two albums, Undertones and Hypnotized, were really pop punk. And on Positive Touch, the third album, they kind of stretched out and expanded their palette. XTC, White Music, and Go2 both had Barry Andrews as the keyboardist, and then he left and they added Dave Gregory. And that album kind of had more of a, I think, less arty and more poppy, although with Andy Partridge, you're always going to have a little bit of that arty, nervy sound. I'm cheating a little bit on this one, but Elvis Costello and the Attractions, the first album was him with Clover. The second two were This Year's Model and Armed Forces, and then the third album with the Attraction was Get Happy, which was more of an R&B direction. Right. And, of course, Led Zeppelin 3 following Led Zeppelin 1 and 2.
Right. So. He owns an acoustic guitar.
Yeah. Yes, he does. He finally brought it out.
Yeah.
So that's the extent of my notes. Great. I'll open it up to you guys.
Well, having read that book, it really talks about when, well, if you read a lot of the chapters, when you get Rundgren as a producer, you're getting a lot more than just a guy that's going to sit behind the desk. He's actually going to play on your record. He's going to shape the songs the way he thinks they should be shaped based on what he thinks of your band. And it's really interesting to think about Rundgren's ability to blend into a band like the Psychedelic Furs, right? Especially when the first two were kind of post-punk, you almost would think, well, maybe he would take it in that direction. Right. But it's really interesting that he... Love My Way is a great song.
Yeah, I think the band was open to going a different way.
Yeah.
And I did read in that chapter that... Todd did send them back to write some more. He thought that they didn't have enough material for the album, so they went back and wrote some more. And one song that was written while they were recording was Sleep Comes Down.
Oh, okay.
So.
Okay. So a couple things about Psychedelic Furs. First, I'll mention Somebody played a psychedelic fur song last night.
Yes, he did.
At the Hive Hoot.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, that was great.
So there was that. And then second of all, but not from this album. Not from this album. It's from the Mirror Moves album, I think. But here's what I think about psychedelic furs. I don't understand why. It seems to me they don't get the respect that they should. They're not mentioned often when people talk about the great bands of the post-punk new wave era.
Right.
You rarely hear about them, right. You know? And I don't get it. Like, why? Why? Anybody have any thoughts on that? You have any thoughts on that, Eric?
Well, I think their first four albums were all fantastic, but it did kind of show that progression that you would see with 80s bands of maybe more production going along. I think Mirror Moves was, well, the fifth album, which I forget after Mirror Moves, was, I think, overly produced. But Mirror Moves did have the... you know, typical 80s production, and that's the song. That's the album that guy played a song from last night.
Yeah.
But I really like that Mirror Moves album. I think the song writing is great, and I think the 80s production doesn't outweigh the strength of the songs.
They're definitely a band who's was able to move more into the mainstream than a lot of bands that were considered post-punk, right, in the early 80s. Maybe... you might say Echo and the Bunnymen did that too a little bit, but Psychedelic Fur is probably more, I would say.
And Richard Butler is quite a presence on stage.
Absolutely.
I remember Patrick talking about Julian Cope having a microphone that he could climb up.
Yeah, a ladder.
Richard Butler doesn't have that, but he does know how to use a microphone to, I don't know, interact with the audience and express himself.
Yeah, spin around. I'll tell you one quick Psychedelic Furs anecdote, and this could be a topic for a show sometime. I was at a concert, Psychedelic Furs, and my future wife was at the same concert, and I did not know her at the time. And it wasn't until later we put the pieces together that
we were
both at that same show.
That's some cosmic stuff.
Yeah, it was weird, man. It was weird.
All right. Well, I don't know if we want to let other, if anybody else has any comments on that album or
anyone. Anyone? Jason is.
You covered it too.
Making a motion, yeah. Jason Goble is approaching the microphone here.
I'll give two quick anecdotes. So my school, Colgate University, they would have spring party weekend. Psychedelic Furs played my senior year of spring party weekend. They only played for an hour. I was friends with a bunch of people, a bunch of friends in Sigma Chi fraternity who almost got into fisticuffs with the Psychedelic Furs. They only played for an hour. They all started approaching the bus like yelling, like, this ain't right. You guys only played for an hour. And I was pretty sure Colgate was going to be on MTV News. But... the only other thing I'd add is I did see him recently, and exactly what you chimed in, Richard Butler, you chimed in as well. Richard Butler is great on stage,
yeah.
And the band still is an amazing band. So
agreed. Yeah,
very
for
cool.
Sure. All right. All right. Thanks, Eric. Hang on. We got to give you a question from the bag
of questions.
All right. I'll take my licks.
See what we got here. Oh, boy. This is a long one.
Yeah.
This one goes on. Says two, this is a two.
To the back.
This goes on to the back. Okay, ready? All right, here's your question, Eric. It's actually not a question. It's more of a direction, okay? Please dissect American Pie line by line, analyzing the use of allegory and metaphor while also acknowledging the reasonable scholarly debate over the subject matter, and present a cogent summary of McLean's true intent as it relates to the human experience. Be sure to cite your references in corresponding footnotes.
Pass.
You're the best for this, though. You always have all the notes, right?
So, that was a perfect one for Eric. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. All right. We got somebody else tomorrow. We just don't know who it is.
Yeah, we're waiting to see.
I'm still waiting on that beer. All right. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you all tomorrow.
Standing in your overcoat.
Bring party weekend. 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 Bring party weekend.